go.
We're
back at it again! Hi, guys.
Hey, we've been off for a couple weeks. Sorry about that.
It happens.
The winter is unkind to our bodies.
Yeah, it's just suddenly decided to be winter, too. Yeah. We were doing so well.
We were doing
up until Ohio was so like, well.
Yeah.
Would you like single-digit numbers?
Also? Yeah, how rude.
Here you go. And here's some snow.
I personally struggle with that. I know you do, too. But, like, the pressure changes in my brain. Even with the new medicine, like, it's
still rough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, sorry, guys. We were gone for like a couple weeks,
but
now we're
fine.
Back.
Yep, we're back. And we've got a doozy
today. Ooh, I'm so excited.
We've got a doozy. The much awaited case of the American Psycho. I know you've been waiting for it.
I've been waiting because...
I know you've been waiting for
like,
it.
Because, like, just an aside, American Psycho, the film with Christian Bale, is one of my favorite movies.
I'm going to need a lot of your commentary then because I have actually never seen it. I know. Even after doing this case, I still haven't seen it.
I'm on a big, like, lady director kick right now, and that film is directed by a woman.
Yeah. It's a lady movie? Yeah.
Nice.
Mary Harron directed it, and it is a fine film. And Christian Bale
He's a gem.
He's a gem.
I am a big fan of his.
And, I mean, there's a lot of, like, really good actors in it.
I was looking at...
Reese Witherspoon's in it.
Yeah, Josh Lucas, who I love.
Yeah.
I love him. Sweet Home Alabama is, like, my jam.
Justin Theroux's in it.
Who the hell? Oh, is that Jennifer Aniston's ex?
Both, yeah. Uh-huh. They dated for a hot sec.
They did. Didn't they get married? Were they ever married? No, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
I only know him in connection to Jen Aniston.
Oh, and there's a younger gal. She's really great in it, too. What's her name?
It's not Reese Witherspoon.
It's not. She's blonde. There's a lot of blondes in the Hollywood.
That's okay. We'll get there.
We'll get there. Yeah.
You might remember.
Yeah, give me some
as
time.
We go.
This brain isn't what it used to be.
Well, and I did look up the full cast. I researched the film a little bit just to kind of understand the case a little bit better.
Yeah.
So I know the essentials, but I've never actually watched it. So I'm not going to be a fake fan.
It's based off of a book, I believe, by Bret Easton Ellis. And the book is insane.
Yes, we're going to talk about the book, too.
It's
heavy.
They could not depict, you know, there's like some really crazy stuff that happens in the book that you wouldn't want to see on film, to be honest.
And I think it's notable to say that the movie was made in a time where they didn't put that kind of stuff on public TV.
Because it's 2000, maybe?
Yeah, you know, like now that we have streaming services where there's no network standards anymore, really, to like... Because remember the days where HBO was where the racy stuff was.
Oh, yeah.
Or the super violent stuff.
We had The Sopranos and, like, the first, like, kill scene in The Sopranos, like, everyone was like, whoa, we've never seen this on TV.
But it was on, like, paid programming.
Right.
And that's kind of where the standard, like, if it was free.
Chloe Savini.
Oh, I know who that is. Yeah.
I don't know if I'm saying her name right.
No,
she's in it.
You're saying it. I think it sounds right.
Yeah.
You're saying it well enough for me to know exactly who you're talking about. So, yeah, it was, like, made during, before streaming, so there were actually, like, content standards that they had.
For sure.
Even for rated R movies, they had to kind of...
And honestly, I feel like, originally, they had more racy stuff in it, because I think it had an R rating.
Yeah, it did.
But, like, I think the original cut had more.
Really?
I think so.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I could be making that up.
Simply based on this case, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Not surprised at all. Anyway, for those tuning in for the first time, this is Cookies and Crime.
Oh, hi, yeah. Oh,
this is Renee.
And I'm Mindy.
And we just have true crime and snack time.
We just like talking about this stuff, to be honest.
We do. So a case has been researched that I present, and then we cite our sources in the show notes. But ultimately, we are not experts in anything.
We have a lot of strong opinions.
Yep, strong opinions.
Tell them.
Strong opinions, and we're chatty. So if you're expecting like...
And we're friends, so like it's...
We're going to deviate from the script.
Yeah, this is like the part of the reason we 100%. Bonded in general.
Yeah. I said, you like murder? And you said, you like murder?
Wait a second.
Let's
do Spider-Man meme.
And we were like, why don't we just do a podcast just for fun?
Yeah.
And look at us now.
And now we have like listeners.
Yeah.
And that is so cool. And thanks for listening.
Yeah.
And
thanks for being here.
You should buy our merch because that actually supports us financially.
It is. Actually, at the end, when we wrap up, I'll explain why we also don't have ads, just in case you haven't heard any.
But also, you don't have to in this economy. We get it.
So, okay. Today's case, the American Psycho case. We're gonna talk about Ethan Windom. But first, let's talk about Judy. So Judy Heindel. Okay, bear with me, guys. I forgot my tablet, which I usually use to read.
Yeah,
my
she's without her tablet scripts today, which is very odd.
It's very odd. So I'm trying to go off of my laptop, which is also recording everything. So it's just kind of a hot mess. Also, because it's been a couple weeks, I don't remember all the details, so I might misspeak and backtrack and stuff like that. So anyway, okay. Judy Heindel was born in 1964 in Washington State. She was, at a fairly young age, she moved to Boise, Idaho, where she ended up graduating from high school. So, like, the formative years are probably in Idaho.
She's a Midwestern gal.
She is. She is. Only about 2 years
is
after...
Is that the Midwest?
I mean, it's a little more west than, like, we're in the middle of Midwest. We're, like, as Midwest as you can get.
I'm not geographically...
Idaho's western than us.
Okay.
More western, way more western than
that's
us.
That's not my strong suit.
It's not as far out west as, like, Utah, Colorado, like, Arizona.
Yeah.
But it is, like...
Potatoes.
Yeah. So it's, like, Midwest to western United States.
Gotcha.
So only a couple years after graduation, she married Craig Windham. And
aww,
they,
young.
Yeah, she was but a babe. She was probably like 20.
Oof.
Yeah.
Long.
So she was a babe.
I wouldn't recommend, for all your listeners out there who aren't married.
Well, I mean.
I wouldn't recommend getting married that young.
I wouldn't feel the pressure of getting married that young. My parents were married. My mom was younger than that. She was fresh out of
high
school.
Different time.
Different time. And I think it also, like, it depends on the people.
That's true.
If you're impulsive in nature, maybe slow down a little bit with that decision.
Yeah, slow your roll.
But that's fine. Especially because, so they had two sons together, Mason and Ethan, and then they got divorced. So it didn't work out for them. There are success stories for marrying that young and quick, but not everyone is that lucky. So as a divorced single mom, Judy ended up gaining interest in social work. So
love that.
She graduated from college with a degree in social work and then
good
got a job
her,
in the
that's,
field.
That is rough work.
It's rough. It takes a very specific personality to succeed, too, because you have to not only be, like, empathetic and compassionate, but you also have to be able to, like, compartmentalize and problem
solve.
Oh, for sure,
because you see some rough stuff.
Yeah, it's you're dealing with people at their worst.
It's for the strong of heart. Hey, Boone.
Boone is joining us in the studio today, by the way.
Yeah, he's actually down here with us, so he's just coming to say hi.
Yeah, and I'm blocking his access to my computer this time because I learned from the past. Look at you, such a good boy. Okay. So, the year 2000, Judy got into a pretty rough car pedestrian accident. She actually almost died.
Oh my gosh.
I'm assuming, based on how extensive her injuries were, that she was the pedestrian in the car pedestrian accident. So she got hit by a car. Recovery was really painful and really slow.
Almost, I'm taking a picture
because he's
down here
really
in the middle
adorable.
Of us, and it's so cute.
I would encourage you to follow us on social media to see these behind the scenes.
He's our third host. Hey, he's so good.
Hey, baby. Anyway, back to Judy. So she, so not only did it almost take her life, but it like changed her trajectory in life. So she decided to have a career change after that happened. I imagine,
like, oh my gosh, I can relate.
Yeah, right?
I
something
can relate.
Like that when it hits you and you're
when you have a life-changing experience where you actually face death, you evaluate, like, what's important.
You think very differently.
For
and
sure.
You have a different gauge on what you can handle.
For sure.
So, like, if you're already, like, if it's a physical, if she's, like, permanently affected by these injuries, social work might not be for her. So she decided she can now identify better with students who struggle with physical or mental disabilities, which
sure.
is so sweet.
Yeah.
So she furthered her education and became a special ed teacher at Eagle High School in Boise.
That's also a very difficult job. Mm-hmm. It can be very rewarding, but it takes a very special person.
So I think teaching in high school
is
a tough
that's
job.
That's a really tough age.
Yeah. And then catering to special needs students is like an additional level of struggle. So I commend her for being
Absolutely.
Able to do that.
Absolutely.
And everyone loved her. She was like a really sweet.
Well, yeah.
Person.
I mean, she already sounds like a stand-up gal.
Like a precious little soul. So anyway, several months before our story takes place, her older son, Mason, had moved out. I'm assuming going to college, but I can't confirm basically anything on Mason, which is fine. The story's not I mean, it affects him in his life now, but it doesn't, you know, he's not a quote unquote main character. So Mason moves out and does his thing and does the adult stuff. And part of his motivation to move out, which was confirmed later in the legal proceedings, was the escalation of the relationship between Judy and his brother, Ethan, who was 16 at the time.
So her other son.
Her other son. Gotcha. The younger son, Ethan, became enough of a problem with his mother that Mason just didn't want to be in the middle of that anymore. Oh, okay. So he left.
Oh, wow.
So let's talk about Ethan. Ethan Windham. He's a huge mega fan of Bret Easton Ellis.
So that's already a red flag.
So he's if you didn't remember from the beginning of the episode, he's the writer of the infamous 1991 novel American Psycho. And Ethan was also a fan of the movie adaptation made in the year 2000 featuring Christian Bale. So big fan of this is an interesting case to me too, because it's one of those where like, if you hear about the investigation from like an investigator, it's framed like, oh, this guy really loved serial killers and he loved like violent horror movies. And I like look at myself and I am a walking red flag too. Yeah. I don't behave.
They can profile me.
Yeah. If they go strictly off of interests, we are both super, super in danger.
I gotta be real like that. Like I couldn't even get through that book.
That's saying something.
I mean, it is explicit.
Yeah. Even the movie seems like it would be probably too much for me to visually consume.
Like there's a dark humor about the movie that like it's tastefully done.
It's put as a drama comedy, as like a dramedy.
Yes. Like it's like tastefully done. And like there are some violent scenes, but really like there's worse on TV right now, to be honest.
You know, that's fair. That's fair. So, Ethan is, as I said, he's obsessed with the criminal mind, like us. He consumed, read practically any book he could get his hands on within the realm of, like, crime and serial killers. Dahmer, Manson, Bundy, like, you name it, this guy had their biography on his shelf.
It sounds almost like, although, like, for us, it's, like, interesting because, like, that human behavior, like, it's hard to imagine doing that kind of thing, but to him it almost seems like there's like idolizing.
That's how I kind of looked at it too. So instead of being productive and like making a podcast or
talking about like, okay, like how do we prevent this type of behavior, how do we stay safe,
he wasn't really even like a student of the law either. Like he wasn't researching stuff to know how to prevent or like make a difference
just
in
discuss
that field.
About like, you know, like clearly, you know, when we talk about people, especially if they kill multiple people, like there's like I might have to take this toy away from him if it's distracting.
He's got a squeaky toy.
He's like attention seeking right now because we're not paying attention to him.
It adds an ambiance. It really does. Episode. I like it.
He's our good boy.
Yeah.
But you know, like we try to like break down like mentally where they're at, and like if there's like a personality disorder, because like there's some kind of dysfunction.
Yes.
To make somebody act in that way.
See, I can see someone like you, like a psych major, collecting those kinds of books.
I find it fascinating.
Yeah, and I could see a future detective collecting those kinds of books. A future lawyer collecting those kinds of books.
Right.
But Ethan was none of those things. He instead decided that with this morbid, like intense interest, he was going to let it guide his life rather than like inspire change.
Yeah.
So he demanded that environmental changes take place in his home to cater to this new obsession of the American Psycho movie and book.
Like what kind?
So from what I understand about this house, there are three bedrooms. Okay. So as Ethan's obsession with Patrick Bateman grew, the character in American Psycho, as it grew, he decided that he should take on the master bedroom. So he forced his mom out of the master bedroom and into the smaller bedroom. And then he just continued to claim territory. So he took on the remaining room, as especially after his brother moved out, and turned it into the living room, into a weightlifting room so he could get jacked.
Because in the film, you know, Christian Bale
he's heavily disciplined.
Super disciplined. Like, yeah. Has this extreme meticulous exercise routine. And, like, he is, like, very physically fit.
Yes. And he had, like, according to my research and not actually me watching the movie, he's very, he has expensive taste.
Yes.
He's immaculate. He, yes. So.
Very neat. Everything just has to be like perfect.
Lots of OCD kind of tendencies.
Yes, yes, yes.
So while it doesn't sound like Ethan has OCD, I'm not a psychologist, by the way, disclaimer there. I don't know. Maybe he does, and I just don't understand OCD. But based on Patrick Bateman OCD.
It's very obsessive.
He does not have Patrick Bateman OCD. He has, like, he wants to emulate.
Yep.
The energy rather than actually having the kind of mental state that prompts that kind of behavior. Yep. So he, so he basically bullies his mother out of her bedroom.
That is
and then
really
takes
scary.
Over the living room and then puts stuff in the third bedroom. Like he, like she doesn't.
And you said he's like 16.
He's 16 years old.
Oh my gosh.
16 years old
so
and he's
scary.
Running his household.
Absolutely not.
Poor Judy has no idea how to handle him.
And it, also, is she a single mom at this time?
She is. Okay. She's, yeah. So that's. I don't understand.
So there's no, like, the, no man of the house
there's
to
no
be
man
like, hey.
Living in the house to bully him back.
Yeah.
So to speak. Not that fathers should bully, but, like, seriously.
But also, like, a man like don't treat your mother like
someone
that.
Someone should have been able to defend poor Judy because she was not equipped to handle the mental bullying and the physical bullying. This boy is not a small boy. This is a 16-year-old who is tall and... I mean, he's not huge.
Oh, I mean,
but
have you seen 16-year-olds today?
He's a solid.
They're all bigger than us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then most of them have facial hair now already. And
they're
I'm
all like,
dang, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so Ethan could both physically and mentally intimidate his mother. And
crazy.
So his, as this behavior kind of takes over the living situation as well. His moods become even more unstable. So he screams at her.
Gross.
He shoves her around.
Gross.
And continues to, like, physically intimidate her to so that she meets his demands. So he...
That's disgusting.
She essentially became a servant. Not only is she catering to his every whim, but he has her buy him expensive clothes, colognes, personal hygiene items, skincare, bedding, anything he wanted to make him, in his mind, Patrick Bateman. He insisted she buy for him. And she did, because how would you say no to that? How could this poor small woman...
I mean, it sounds like she needs to, like, you know... Send him to boot camp or something.
Someone needs to just knock him around a little bit.
Seriously,
I don't condone child abuse,
no,
but in this
not.
Case, I feel like...
No, there definitely needs to be, like, a masculine figure, though.
Yes.
Like, some father
100%.
Figure saying, like, hey, absolutely not.
And his dad is in... This is what... It's a very, like... I can't speak for their relationship as co-parents. I can't. I didn't find enough to support this opinion. Again, this is an unhinged, uneducated opinion, but it doesn't sound like his dad's worth much. Because he's
well,
in the
clearly
picture.
Clearly, he's not around.
He's not,
you know,
like,
he's not parenting.
He's not involved enough to make a difference in Ethan's life.
Wow.
So, Ethan doesn't see this financial burden that he's becoming on a woman who's already, like, she's physically trying to still deal with the injuries that she had from the car accident. She's trying to reset her career. She's also financially struggling because she's a single mother and they're a single income home. And he does not have any awareness with the situation. So he'd actually, whenever he'd talk to his brother, he would, like, vent about his mom. And he would say things like, quote, mom is going to get what she deserves.
What?
And in a separate conversation, Ethan Ethan told Mason that he knew how to kill someone and was even capable of tricking a psychologist into giving him a false diagnosis. First of all. If you couldn't guess where this is going, you know where this case is going. But, like, when we listen to his interrogation, this is mean of me, but when I heard that he said that to his brother, like, I am so good I can trick a psychologist into giving me a false diagnosis. If you watch his interrogation, this guy's a joke.
Oh, for sure.
This guy can't fool anyone.
Well,
anything.
This is the type. Yeah, this is the type. See, he sounds super narcissistic.
Definitely. Well, like, there's a lot of, I read some... this is not an official diagnosis, so don't take it as an official diagnosis. But some people did comment that he sounds psychopathic. But when I... So I'm picturing.
It sounds
like
he wants to be psychopathic.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yes.
It sounds narcissistic to me, but not actually.
Right. Yeah. Like he wishes he was a crazy psychopath like Patrick Bateman. I realize though that like I'm not educated enough to see that there can be. I know that there can be like psychopaths that are stupid and just have no conscience.
Yeah.
Maybe he's that. Maybe that's what he is. And that's what those comments were kind of implying, that this guy is an idiot, but he has no conscience and therefore he's a psychopath. Sure. But he wants to be the intelligent kind of psychopath.
I think that's badly.
And that just kills me. Every time I've watched his interrogation probably 5 times. And I'm like, I can't see a shred of evidence to support his claim to his brother. There's no way this guy.
No, he fancies himself
a calculated potential killer.
That's what he wants to be.
Yeah. So Judy, poor Judy, was pretty aware of Ethan's intention of violence. Like, she's not stupid. She sees
that
signs.
That has to be terrifying for her.
Yeah, she's not.
Because what do you do?
Feeling safe in her own home. And she's mentioned that to friends. She's like, I don't sleep well. Like, I can't.
That's awful.
It's difficult to live in this house. Yeah. One time, Ethan even locked her in her bedroom. Like, he locked his mother in her bedroom. That's, like, so...
Because he's, like, physically,
He's so much bigger than her.
Like, no, but he's, like, physically bullying her.
He's physically bullying
his
mother.
Like, he's mentally...
It is abuse. Yeah. She is being abused by her son. In every... In all of... Like, sad. Physical, mental, psychological, all of this. Poor... Judy is a victim in the biggest way. So, Judy speaks to Craig, Ethan's dad, if you remember that guy, about her concerns... And tells him that she was afraid that one day Ethan would kill her in her sleep.
Oh, my God.
Now, I made a note to myself, and it doesn't look like I filled in anything else after the note, but I made myself a note to fact check whether Craig did anything, and I couldn't find anything that he did anything to help her when she made these claims. This is why I have this opinion of Craig being a useless dad, because if your ex-wife, your co-parent, is telling you,
I'm afraid
Ethan
of my child.
Ethan is dangerous and I feel like he's going to kill me. Craig should have gotten his butt over and done something, or called the cops on him or something, but nothing was done. And like, this is why we're talking about this case.
If you're afraid of your child, like then like in inpatient hospital, like
something.
Yeah.
And if Judy does not think she's capable of doing that to her child, the dad should have been the one to step
for
in
sure.
and do
Somebody
it.
Has to.
Somebody has to. But because Craig didn't do anything and because Ethan
like,
was
look
out
at
of
all
control,
these so many red flags.
This is like, I feel like everyone knows someone who's weird like this. Like, even if you didn't,
we all have that weird kid at
school. The abuse part of it. If you saw these kinds of behaviors, like him emulating a super sketchy character in media, maybe say something before he becomes the next shooter.
Absolutely.
Like, maybe even if it's like, even if it's investigated and nothing happens, like at least you said something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, I digress. I couldn't prove that Craig was helpful. That doesn't mean he wasn't helpful. That just means that on record, it was never recorded that he was helpful.
Yeah.
So Judy was like determined to get Ethan help. Bless her heart, she tried. Yeah. So he saw therapists all the time. She was making the steps that I feel a single mom would and should make, right?
He was also working full-time,
right,
trying to support her family.
The frustrating part for me, and this is no shade to mental health professionals necessarily, because I'm not working in the field, I'm not educated enough to make different diagnoses than they did, but the thing that he was diagnosed with was major depressive disorder and generalized anxiety. Those were the only two
things.
Well,
I mean, that could be correct, but also
there's no way it's the only thing.
Because you can't diagnose like sociopathy or psychopathy at that age.
There's a lot of delusional thoughts happening with
him. For sure. Maybe even like a schizoaffective or like some schizotypal, something like that.
Something way more than he's depressed and anxious. So his mental state continued to escalate, unsurprisingly. He told a shocking amount of people, both peers and teachers, that his thoughts were getting dangerous and difficult to control. If someone straight up tells you that, what the heck are you doing? Like, report that.
Yeah, yeah.
If a peer...
For sure.
Was like,
oh my God, I heard that at school.
If I'm having a lot of dangerous thoughts and I don't know if I can control them.
In this climate?
I would immediately. Now this, granted, okay, so that I'm glad you said that. Yeah. This is the year 2000, wait, what did I say? See, I have to go back in my notes. What year is it? It's 2000, oh, maybe it's just the year 2000.
I think
there's no way it's the year 2000.
I feel
Hold on,
that's
let me scroll.
When?
2007.
Okay.
2007 is when this actually happens. I'm still building up to it.
So, apparently. I didn't write actually, down during this time, because I was in I graduated high school in 2006.
Okay,
yes, I'm an
okay.
old, I'm an old, if you will. So, like during that time, like we actually didn't have the amount of school shootings, except yeah. for Columbine. We did not have like the school shootings that happened today.
So this is a tough question to probably answer then. If you so put yourself back into your high school yeah. mindset, would you have reported someone who told you that?
For sure.
I mean, now I know I would have.
Like we all knew about Columbine. Like yeah. we were all aware of that. But like when I was in high school, we did not have like shooting drills.
Neither did I. I feel like if someone told me that, I would be more afraid of them doing a one-off murder than or I like would a full you know, some kind of shooting.
Like we did, you know, like there was like the bomb. Like the Oklahoma City bomb, like there was right. like things that like were that happened, and you know September 11th.
Oh yeah.
So
I was just thinking that yeah. actually. Post you know, like, 9/11
I feel like terrorism was in everybody's minds.
People were afraid. They weren't as afraid sure. as they are now, but they were no, still like afraid
because
enough.
School shootings were not. I don't know what changed
wasn't
with that.
A common thing. Yeah. yeah. Well, I know they definitely like now they have school like shooting drills.
Every week.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there's a shooting like every mm-hmm. every day. Probably it's insane.
The training that students go through is so different.
Absolutely
than when we were
different.
In school.
Absolutely different.
But still, I mean, even then, I feel like I would be alarmed if a student, and I would definitely tell an adult if a student told me that they were having dangerous.
Oh,
thoughts,
for sure.
And they were getting difficult to control. So
yeah, especially in that year, because like terrorism was like definitely in everybody's
yeah.
mind.
And okay, so this quote comes directly from some of the legal documents. He felt that like quote there was a monster inside him telling him to hurt other people.
Yeah. I mean, almost that sounds like a cry for help a little bit.
Right? But okay, here's the only evidence I found of him successfully tricking therapists. Well, and he's speaking to therapists, he lied about his homicidal and sometimes suicidal thoughts. Now, that's not uncommon. I have a lot of friends who struggle with mental health that have done that.
Sure.
They don't, like, because they're afraid of being locked up.
Well, and you also don't, like, there might be a fear of judgment.
Yeah.
There might be a fear of, yeah. you know, like, that I'm very different. And, yeah. like, you know.
I could see him being okay at omitting information.
Yeah.
I don't see him
well,
okay.
Well, that can be manipulative, too.
Yeah, I don't
And it sounds
see
like he is manipulative.
He's manipulative, but I don't think he's clever enough to convince someone
no,
he's not homicidal.
He's just a kid.
He's a dumb kid,
yeah.
too. So, okay. I lost my spot. Please hold. Oh, okay. So when I mentioned Ethan made himself a weightlifting space to get jacked, I meant it. This is like a full gym setup, basically, for weightlifting in his living room. Did he get as shredded as Christian Bale? Heck no. Of course he didn't. He doesn't no. have a Hollywood trainer, and he doesn't have the diet. Mm-mm. And that's like half of it. But he got kind of big. Like he bulked.
He put some muscle on,
He didn't
on,
get
sure.
shredded, but he bulked up a mm-hmm. bit. So, as per the evidence in the house, he was likely also taking like weight gainer powder and potentially steroids. And I think that's
if he could get a hold of them.
If they found the potential for steroids, I feel like he probably maybe had some. I didn't find any source that said like to confirm he was taking them uh-huh. and also how long.
Yeah.
So like I don't know how much that would have affected his mental state. Not that he needed help.
Oh, I mean, because steroids can make you very aggressive.
Yeah, 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 they can. So, like, maybe it was a factor in this case. Maybe it wasn't. Either way, I'm throwing that fact out there. They found the potential for steroid use. So, in addition to studying abnormal psychology and real-life criminal muses, he also attempted to develop routines that mirrored Patrick Bateman. He bought the exact same white comforter as in the movie. I mean, Judy bought it. He also bought the same exact luggage.
I wish you could see my
Christian
face. Oh, that luggage. That's what does he say in the film? He says, Jean-Paul Gaultier. It's like the, where did you get that overnight bag?
My God.
God, that's like super expensive.
How
that's like, this is high end.
Yes. And the exact same skincare products. Skincare products alone are overpriced. Like,
oh no, but the like
to get
Patrick
the same,
Bateman's
yeah.
is, I mean, we're talking
astronomical.
Like, yeah, this is like
prices.
Like luxury
is,
brand.
I'm assuming this is unconfirmed. I'm assuming
Judy
went into intense debt just to keep up with all these demands.
I would never.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would never.
Yeah. No.
I would put him in jail.
Yeah.
Because I'd be standing up
yeah.
and I'd be like, you know, I would be like, no. And then if he tried to hit me, I'd be like, no, jail.
This is how this is what makes me the most angry. It's not even that he was.
But Biscuit would never allow.
He would, no.
Biscuit would never allow.
You have a partner in the home that would be like, you back off right now.
Oh,
like,
Biscuit would never.
Never. This is poor Judy. She was herself, and she's such
terrible.
A,
and she seems like a really passive.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah. She's very meek. Yeah. She's a very gentle soul.
It's just, and it's honestly like that environment is like rife for that kind of behavior. Abuse,
yeah.
Because like nobody is.
Nobody's going to do anything about it. Wow. So anyway, so his idolization became intense. He later claimed that he looked up to psychopaths because they're, quote, the strongest group of guys, the smartest group of guys.
Smartest?
And they're the most interesting. They have an exciting life. That's what smartest? He assumes. That's what he assumes.
All of them are in jail, my dude.
Yeah. I mean, most of them. Some of them are running companies or countries. Dangus. I mean, there are benign psychopaths walking around every day.
Oh, absolutely.
There's... Because they thrive on the workplace.
Right.
Hype.
A lot of
they
CEOs, a lot of politicians.
Yeah, they don't have to kill anyone.
They're just void of like the like regular, you know, empathy which that is like whatever. A lot of us feel. No, but seriously, and they like thrive in those high power positions.
But the point is they're not going to kill someone.
Correct.
They're just going to succeed in their career.
Most psychopaths are not murderers.
The ones who are murderers are actually the ones who are not as intelligent as.
Well, and like they like. So when we're talking about like the Dahmers of the world, the John Wayne Gacy's, you know, the Ted Bundy's, there's a fair amount of abuse that happens in childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And there's typically like a lot of them meet certain criteria. And a lot of times, which is really interesting, a lot of them will sustain a head injury in early childhood. And sometimes that actually changes like the brain itself.
Uh-huh.
And so like it. There's like, typically, there is like a perfect combination, a perfect storm, if you will, to make that kind of person.
Yeah.
But it's what's really interesting to me is like that we do see this phenomena happen with young men that idolize school shooters. I've seen that. Mm-hmm. I've seen idolizing Hitler. I've seen idolizing, you know, like these like. Like that is just really interesting to me.
I'm saying this is with no psych background at all. I feel like there should be a different diagnosis for the more chaotic manic ones versus I read a book once that was like it was talking about psychopaths that operate in everyday life. The majority of them, they are smart enough to know how to blend into society.
And they try to.
Which means they don't break the law willy-nilly.
Correct.
Because they understand consequences.
Correct.
I feel like that's like a completely different group of people than the people who are out there doing shootings and committing crimes.
Yes.
And serial killing.
Yes.
Like, I don't.
There's a lack of, they have difficulty controlling impulse.
Yup.
And there is the difference between like, that kind of psychopath is just not caring about the consequence.
Yeah.
It's whatever.
Yeah.
Oh,
I feel like this case really highlights the difference too, because this is an example of someone with the messy version looking at the clean version and going, I am that smart. I identify with him so much. I am that intelligent. No, you are not, dude.
No.
You are the messy kind who's going to get caught and has gotten caught.
Yes.
So sad. Anyway, okay, so as predicted, as we've discussed, this there's no one stopping Ethan, so his behavior becomes progressively more and more like his serial killing hero. So that brings us to January 25th, 2007. Ethan is itching to do something about these urges, and his first line of defense... So, like, this is interesting. He takes small steps to try to stop himself. He takes his anti-anxiety medication, Klonopin.
Ooh.
He actually took 5 times the prescribed dose.
Oh, no. Pause.
Yeah.
Klonopin is a benzo.
Yep.
Benzodiazepine, which was heavily overprescribed in this time.
Mm-hmm.
Benzodiazepines, if none of you know, is an anti-anxiety. It's actually a tranquilizer that should only be used in the short term. We had a lot of people that were struggling from addiction from this during that time specifically because it was overprescribed for people with anxiety.
Which makes sense, especially because if you tell someone it's short acting,
You build up tolerance. Yeah. So you have to take more and more for it to provide the same effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that's when addiction happens.
That makes sense. So later he admits to police that when the Klonopin took no effect, he was, quote, thinking about going downtown and stabbing a couple of bums. They're worthless, he says, end quote.
I'm going to add my two cents right there. There's actually a scene in the film where Patrick
Bateman kills
a homeless person and basically has that kind of
attitude.
Yes.
This man memorized his script. He just doesn't. Yeah. Yeah. So the thought occurred to him, however, that if his mother woke up, she would definitely get in his way of going and killing those bums. He said, quote, if she wakes up, she would have spoiled my plan. Besides, I was going to kill bums anyway. Why not add to the list?
Wow.
And so, as Judy slept, Ethan crept into her bedroom, wearing gloves and carrying one of his heavy weights.
Oh, my God.
He gripped the weight like a weapon and then proceeded to bludgeon her head.
Oh, my God.
He didn't stop at just one swing, either. He, like, excessively beat her in the head until he, quote, had no strength left in his arms. So she was beyond recognition by the time he was done bludgeoning her to death. But just to be safe, because he's super psycho, Ethan decided it best to also then stab her 30 times to make sure
she was
in the heart and lungs. Finally, he cut her throat. His mother bludgeoned her in the head, stabbed her in the heart and lungs, and then sliced her throat.
Demon inside
of
him.
Once he was certain that Judy was dead, he left the knife in her brain for police to then find, like it was a movie prop. This fool thought this was going to be so cinematic. Like, he laid this out like, I am Patrick Bateman.
Gross.
And the police should know that. That's
gross.
So, yes, it's disgusting. It's sick.
God.
This boy is sick.
That is horrible.
So he changed his clothes.
And he's 16?
He's 16 years old. This is a child, essentially. A very big child.
Wow.
He changed his clothes. He washed himself off of Judy's blood. And then he covered her body and the whole room in blankets to hide the blood. Like, he put blankets everywhere.
I can properly clean this up.
Maybe.
No one will know it's me.
It's confusing, though, because he literally said that he left the knife in her brain so that the police will find it. But he covers the room and all the blood with blankets. So, like, I don't think he was thinking clearly enough to see that there was dissonance there.
Well, and also, if you're able to commit an act like that, your brain is not.
He's not thinking anyway.
No.
So he also spread.
And to that extent.
It's excessive. It's excessive is what it is. She was dead the first time.
Yeah.
He didn't have to keep going.
No.
He spread pet food all over the floor and then lit a candle in the room for effect, I guess. I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know what he was doing.
Yeah. It almost sounds like there's something else going on mentally, like maybe a bipolar, maybe like some kind of mania.
Maybe he's got a tumor in his brain.
Yeah. This is.
He's not well.
Yeah.
That's for sure. That's for darn sure. So, and then this boy changes the family answering machine message to say that he and Judy were out of town to, quote, deal with family problems in Washington.
So I'm going to pause you again. This is another scene from American Psycho.
To change the answering machine? Oh, that's good to know.
Patrick Bateman, actually, after he kills Paul Allen, which is the very famous scene in the movie, he goes to his apartment, changes the answering machine to say that he was out of town. So that he's drawing from the movie.
He's literally just following the script. So oftentimes Ethan's best friend's girlfriend, I don't know, would pick him up for school in the morning. I'm assuming all three of them.
Yeah.
Like his best friend, the girlfriend.
Sure.
And Ethan, but only the girlfriend was really mentioned. On this day, he called her and said, don't pick me up. And then he leaves the house and locks the door behind him. He walks and hitchhikes to his dad's house.
Hitchhikes?
Which is on the other side of town, 6 miles away.
My goodness.
He goes to his dad and he says, mom's dead. And then Craig immediately calls the police. The first written down
thing I've seen Craig do. Yeah.
Other than divorce Judy, this is the only thing I've seen him do. Is call the police because finally he's listening. So we're going to pause real quick and I'm going to share a clip from this fool's interrogation.
Ooh, I am so excited.
Mom, she did something to you, or this was some fascination that you have here watching these movies that you acted out.
Do you not understand this book?
Okay, tell me about this book.
This is a book. Okay, have you never even heard about books like these? Have you never even heard about books like these? Tell me about it. Do you not understand the concept?
Tell me about it.
Of the idea of the business world itself.
Tell me what it is.
Why don't you look at Patrick Bateman as a business himself?
Okay.
What does he do? Anyone that gets in his way, he knocks out. What do big business in Wall Street? What does Walmart do? The mom and pop shops, they knock it out. You gotta understand, I'm an AP English. I've been analyzing this stuff beyond belief. Because this is my author study.
Okay, so.
Wow.
Thoughts. Thoughts on that,
I'm an
Mindy.
AP English.
I was also an AP English, but I don't think I could tell a detective that because I read this book.
As an AP English teacher, I would never allow that to be studied in my classroom.
Also, well, yeah. He said, this is my author study. I did that.
An author study, sure. Author study, okay.
If...
But not that book.
Depending on how loosey-goosey the teacher is, I don't know if I know an English teacher that would be like, yes, read him. That author should be who you focus on. Because it's not really like...
I mean, I guess it's student choice. So, like, you can, you know, I'm sure it's probably student choice to, like, get them, like, into whatever their interests are.
Right.
But, like, I digress. Like, you know, clearly he is trying to school the cop here.
Yeah.
And thinks that he is the smartest person in the room, and clearly he is not.
His accent changes a little bit too while he's talking. So he's like, he's a little bit flustered.
Yeah.
When he's first presented.
There's some delusion.
So
happening.
Right before this part of the interrogation, the cop, they have obviously way more information than he thinks they have already, because that's just standard, like,
right.
Good cops, that's what they do.
Absolutely.
You go into the room with more information. Then you divulge.
Yeah, of course.
You're not going to go tell him, we know you did this right off the bat. This guy doesn't either. They like they send out like nuggets to see what he latches onto.
Yeah.
It's not. So if you I cite this as a source all the time, but Explore With Us is where I got that interrogation footage. They are a YouTube channel who they post the full length interrogations, and they input a lot of commentary based on feedback they got from actual people working in the field, like psychologists and stuff like that. So it's very like educated expert opinions on what you're seeing and hearing. I highly recommend, if you have never heard of them and are interested in stuff like that, like I am, and want to watch a 3-hour interrogation video, watch them. Subscribe to that channel, Explore With Us. They're fantastic. But so why did I bring them up? Right before. So like they have a lot of notes typically on like best practices and whether or not the police officer doing the interrogation followed that best practice. Like they kind of like evaluate the interrogator as much as the suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, they were like, oh, and this guy was like, OK,
mm-hmm.
The cop was not the best interrogator, but he was good at his job. So Before this clip that I just played, he presented to Ethan, like, this is what we found in your room. This is what we found in the house.
Uh-huh.
This is the content we are guessing you consume based on what we found. Things like that book, American Psycho.
Right.
And he, like, before he dives into his analysis of the importance of that book, he like seems kind of flustered, and then it almost, tell me if you got this vibe too, it almost, when he starts diving into it fully, he almost takes on a character.
Yes.
Like he's like, well, why don't you don't understand, I don't but look, Patrick Bateman
is a business.
It's, and
so
then
bizarre.
He like, it's so, almost
what an interesting take.
His accent becomes a little bit more New England,
mm-hmm.
a little bit rougher, like he's trying to also intimidate the cop, and like, I'm like, buddy.
Yeah,
you're not that kind of psychopath.
But like very delusional.
Very delusional. It made me sad. The it's a roller coaster interrogation. It really is, because there are a lot of moments where I was like feeling very like I pitied this kid.
Yeah,
I really felt bad. There were other moments where I was enraged because of what he did to Judy and how he showed no remorse in this interrogation.
Not at all.
None.
Not at all.
So okay. So whether or not,
and that I mean, really, with that, you know, that's when you can actually think about, okay, maybe there is some kind of empathy. Like there's. Because you can't diagnose psychopathy typically at that age, but like, you know,
because it could be so many other things.
Well, and you can see lack of empathy with like a manic episode and bipolar. You can see lack.
Yeah,
of
that's
empathy
what I mean. Like he could have other issues.
Narcissistic personality disorder.
Yeah. So, I must have jumped the gun because I actually just read. This is what happens when I don't look at a script for 2 weeks. Do you, just to bring a little bit of levity into this case, have you seen? I made a note to myself that he had moments in his like character voice that he was putting on where he kind of sounds like that Toronto influencer who does that like bit where she's like, what I don't like is if the business is true. Have you heard that? Is that you left your moms in the hood? I was like listening the full interrogation. I like listened to his voice change and I was like, what is he doing?
Yeah, what
is he doing? That girl who's from Toronto?
Very, very bizarre.
So he's not consistent with that character he puts on either, which I found it funny enough that I left a note in there and was like, I'm going to pause for a second just in case I decide to insert the audio clip from that influencer.
We could use a little levity.
Dude.
What I don't like is if the business is true that you left your moms in the hood, somebody go smoke that youth. You don't leave your moms nowhere. You have money and you left your moms there? Yo, you're sick to my stomach, fam. But if it's not true, Shorty's just talking.
There we go. Like that, she's so funny. I occasionally, now that I've heard her in enough reels, like I occasionally slip into that just because it's hilarious. Where she just goes, your moms nowhere.
I totally do that.
It's like so much worse than like the standard like New England scruffy sounding. I love it. Anyway, okay, so the interrogation, let me just give you like a summary. I'm gonna post some of this, the video content, on Instagram since we don't have video content for the episodes yet. But essentially, so Ethan claims that a stranger broke in, beat his mother to death, and then forced Ethan to stick the knife in her brain. That's what he claims. Okay, he speaks to both, he is interrogated by two detectives. And he speaks to both of them as if he's intellectually superior.
See, that's like, to me, that sounds like just like narcissistic personality, just like far out of the spectrum. Like, because that's you think you're the smartest person in the room.
And sometimes you can pull it off because you know how to talk.
Mm-hmm.
This poor boy does not.
No, he's not even mature enough.
Right. So his tone conveys, I'm smarter than you, but his words make him sound even stupider. So he attempts to manipulate them by mocking them and poking fun at their personal lives, which is like, so like even the cops kind of are like, is this guy for real?
Yeah,
like,
this is embarrassing.
They're like,
I'm embarrassed.
I'm cringing for you.
Yeah.
He legit feels like he's Patrick Bateman. He has like a pretty bold approach, and it's really kind of strange to see from a teenager to challenge the detectives like that.
I'm sure they probably don't see that a ton.
No.
Not with that age.
He comes off as unstable as he is. He's not very impressive. Sure. It's kind of sad. He lashes out at every time he even remotely thinks they're calling him stupid. When they respond, they have to be kind of delicate with how they're responding, because
this guy's delusional. You have to meet him where he's at.
If he even vaguely says he's wrong, he's going to be like, I'm so much smarter than you.
Yeah.
He's going to just point
blank. I'm sure this is a very fragile ego.
Yeah. So he continuously tells them that he's smarter than them. He does... What does my nose say? He does. Oh, this was impressive. So in the interrogation, at some point when he's giving like his alibi or his like story for the day, like what he did, he impressively claims that he was watching a movie at some point in the timeline. And it's later disproven, but the way he describes it is he picked a movie he's seen a million times and he tells them the plot and at what point he did what in. So, like, that was the only impressive thing I saw him do in the entire interrogation, is he knew enough
about the
to
the,
pick a yeah. movie he knew sure. so that if they what quizzed movie did he pick, him, out of curiosity. It was American Psycho, obviously.
oh, so obviously,
which is funny silly because if, you know when he finally like when they find out the actual timeline of events, it also does imitate the movie that he was claiming to have watched. So he yeah, really could have sure. been just retelling what he was doing. Man, but
this guy probably is.
But seen inserting the, wow. Patrick Bateman, and it was
oh
yeah,
boy,
really strange. So they do call him on his crap. And there's like a super sudden shift in his demeanor. They ask him if he knows the difference between right and wrong. And he puts on, that's when he puts on the character. Mm-hmm. That's when, mm-hmm. so the clip I showed you mm-hmm. was from after that point.
Yeah.
He's been accused essentially. Okay. Yeah, and yeah, so yeah. he's defensive. He puts on that character. His accent changes. His tone shifts. The very, body very language strange. Changes. It's like incredibly defensive, incredibly dramatic. That's exactly what made me think of that Toronto girl.
Wow.
A sweet woman died, so this isn't funny, but like really I did chuckle a lot
sure
during his interrogation because well, it was so laughable. I don't know, it was difficult to watch. Just,
he's very out of touch with reality,
incredibly. And then okay, so he gets even bolder and then he dives into this like really, as he kind of did in this clip, this really intricate understanding of Patrick Bateman. He talks about the AP English thing and how that kind of puts him in a position where he can properly evaluate a book mm-hmm. and the value within that book and how he heavily identifies with Patrick. And he's basically like, we have identical mindsets. We're like the same person. Like, I am this man.
This is not a real person, my guy.
And then so like, because he's taking on this character now, he attempts to start bantering with them. So it's not like it was before. He's very not even trying strange. To defend himself very anymore. Strange. He's like bantering with them. He tries to get things in exchange for in like what they know, like mm-hmm. he wants to know what they know mm-hmm. so he but he doesn't think they know as much as him.
Oh no.
So he's like, if I get a private cell, I will like oh help God, you and guy. Tell you this detail. If I get
so
my
he's pulling the Hannibal Lecter
yeah
here too.
And he's like
he's trying to bargain.
If I can get
wild.
My expensive skincare in here
wild.
I will tell you this piece of information.
That is wild.
It's crazy.
Oh, I'm gonna have to watch that whole thing.
Yeah, it's everyone should watch it.
Wow.
Just poor Jimmy.
The audacity.
Oh my gosh. Living with that boy. Now, I'm
oh, he's
sad
very
for him.
Sick.
I think he needs to be institutionalized.
Oh, for sure.
And needs serious
sure.
help. So, like, his accountability is not the same as, like, the average person, I'm sure. But, like, good gracious. So, okay.
That is so crazy.
What's also disturbing is he smiles later when he describes how he killed Judy and what it felt like. And he even like snickers like he's a brilliant mastermind. It's disgusting.
That is gross.
He ultimately tells the detectives that he did it and he felt nothing. So Ethan was later evaluated by a psychologist and a psychiatrist who both said
schizophrenia,
that he was misdiagnosed. He didn't have depression and anxiety. He had paranoid schizophrenia.
Yeah, I can see that.
He had clearly experienced a psychotic break.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, that was very clearly what happened. I don't think anyone would argue with that. They would definitely argue with he's just depressed and anxious. That's like what when he's saying some of the things that he said to peers and teachers, like, there's no way he's just depressed and anxious.
No,
like,
no,
this
no,
boy,
no.
there's something else
and
going on.
That kind of talking down to people, that is a, that's one of the symptoms of schizophrenia.
Because like, he's delusional.
Yes.
It's pure delusion.
You were in tune with, like, something that nobody else is, and, like, you have the answers.
He could have been a cult leader, really.
Truly,
this could have gone in
truly.
Many different directions. So these professionals, though, they did say that if he had been properly diagnosed and treated, Judy might still be alive. Now...
Because if he was on antipsychotics,
yes,
that might have... Yeah.
I'm not... Again, this is not blaming any of his therapists for his actions. However, things like being... This is how crucial that role is as a mental health professional. This is how crucial their job is... That could have made such a difference. His peers and teachers saying something to the right people could have made a difference. Not that anyone should like carry that guilt with them forever, but you know what I mean? Like, don't feel like you can't make a difference in a story like this unfolding.
Yeah.
Because clearly a lot of people could have.
If you see something, say something.
Seriously. So,
to quote a great man.
So, okay, what's interesting is in the legal proceedings, Ethan did show remorse. I imagine he kind of like reached the end of his psychotic episode.
Because when you are in psychosis, when you are experiencing psychosis, you can't fully feel like the rest of us. So
yeah,
he may not have, I mean, it is very much like a, if you've seen a bipolar person have a manic episode, when you are in psychosis and having a psychotic episode, you are very out of touch.
Yes. So he, when he came back to Earth, he apologized to his family and his mom's friends. And despite recommendation for rehabilitation and psychiatric treatment, at 16 years old, Ethan Windham was tried as an adult and given life in prison without parole for the charge of second degree murder. So he was initially charged with first degree murder, but he made a plea agreement and instead pled guilty to second degree murder.
I mean, that with that, the type of crime.
Yeah, I feel like once he's out of the episode, I don't know if I agree with the ruling. I kind of do, but like also this boy needs treatment. Like
I wouldn't say, treatment. I mean, you could do life in treatment, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that prison is the.
Yeah. You know, I don't. His mental history
with that age.
And his suspected diagnosis were discussed at length and even debated in the legal proceedings. This disagreement of diagnosis was noted and was probably the reason rehabilitation wasn't taken into account.
Yeah, that's
because
interesting.
They debated the diagnosis, which is, it kind of kills me a little bit because.
Yeah, it's sad.
He did this a really horrible
thing. This situation
thing.
Is very sad.
Yeah, Judy deserves justice. However, Judy also deserves to have her son treated in
this
a mental
health
facility.
I mean, we're talking about a child.
This is a child. He's 16 years old.
Yeah.
So in 2015, 2016-ish, Ethan tried to appeal his life sentence, claiming his age and immaturity was not were not taken into account with the verdict, which he's probably correct.
Yeah.
He leans on the previously posed theory that he was misdiagnosed and should therefore be sent into rehab, which is, I feel like that's true.
I agree. I totally agree with that.
However, the court believed and decided that the crime on its own is worthy of a life sentence. So
it is an egregious crime.
He went above and it wasn't even like.
But it is.
I would like to assume that even in regular prison, he would have access to some kind of treatment.
I would hope
some kind.
I would hope
at the very least, like antipsychotics or something.
I mean, prison is a business as well.
It is.
So it's really a tricky situation.
Yeah. And it's a little better than it used to be as far as like the care.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I can't verify that either. But based on court documents, it sounds like there was a disagreement regarding whether or not Ethan would ever be safe to release back into the world.
And that is a valid argument.
That's the whole point of rehab and parole, which is probably why they said no to rehab, because they're like, we don't actually want him back in the world. So let's just keep him locked up forever. So, my notes here say he receives treatment and medications in prison. Okay, that's good. And that was ultimately enough in the eyes of the law. So I can't. Oh. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what my opinion there is. Because if he is getting treatment and medication in prison, maybe he should be locked up forever. But I don't think he does sound like he could be safely integrated back into society.
I don't know if I would trust
him.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think it would be an easy life for him either. Because if you knew what he did.
Well,
and
if you went back into society, you're not getting any kind of job.
No, no one's going to hire you because you're viewed as unstable.
Stable.
It doesn't matter how
much.
Honestly,
to me, I would think that institutionalized for life would be more.
Yeah, that makes
like,
more sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know that prison. Yeah, I mean.
It's a tough.
That's so tricky.
I'm really happy that
if he was 35 years old, 25 years old, prison for life.
Sure.
But 16. You know, like, and a lot of time, you know, would also schizophrenia specifically typically isn't diagnosed. Now, for males, it's diagnosed a little sooner, but it usually is. It doesn't hit until you're about late teens, 20s. Hmm. So this is a really unusual case. And, you know, for females, it usually hits like late 20s. And so it's just an unusual situation. And yeah, I like, obviously the nature of the crime is extreme. And
yeah.
So I can see them kind of jumping the gun on life in prison. But for a 16-year-old child, you know, I would just think this kid needs like serious help. And
yeah,
I would think institutionalization in a hospital. In a mental hospital.
In like a highly secure. I don't
sure.
know that much about. I know shockingly more about the British mental prisons, mental health institutions.
I'm not surprised by this.
No, I researched it once for a book. So like the mental hospital / prison.
Right.
I don't know that much about the states, so I
can't say that I do either.
Yeah, as far as the U.S. goes, I don't. I mean, maybe there is one like they do have in the UK, but yeah, I don't know. It's a tricky one. I'm glad I never have to be the one to make that decision for a violent teenager.
Yeah.
So Judy was an active part of a very large and loving family and community. And what's super sweet is one of my sources that I'm going to cite was her obituary. And I like that's common. I usually go to the obituary to learn more about like her background and stuff like that, like the victim's life. And this one, I almost teared up a little bit because in memory of her charitable heart, in lieu of flowers, her family requested memorial donations be made to the Idaho Food Bank.
Aww.
And that's like super heartwarming and profound. I would like to think that when I pass, my family thinks like that about me.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, instead of flowers, I think Renee would have wanted you guys to donate to this place. I really love hearing those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So that's super sweet.
Poor Judy.
It's a really horrible thing that happened. It's a really tragic thing for both her and her son and her family. But like her and Ethan, like, again, Ethan is in a tricky situation. Judy had to be the one to face.
This is a really difficult one. I feel like if we can take any lesson from this, like, please pay attention to the people around you.
Yeah.
And especially if there are young people that are, you know, voicing these kinds of things.
If they're making like, any kind of cry something, for help.
You need to
speak up.
Don't just ignore that kind of behavior.
Because it's sad. It's sad. It's troubling.
Sad.
And clearly the consequences are violent and they don't end well for him or his family. So,
yeah.
Wow. Super sad. Anyway, let's end this on a sweet note.
Yeah, totally.
What do we have today?
I think we need one.
What do we have today?
We have something really special.
Yes.
One of our listeners, Skylar.
Shout out to you, Skylar.
Shout out to Skylar. Little babe. She made us something.
What is it?
We have got a homemade chocolate chip banana bread.
I love banana bread.
Also,
I love banana bread.
If you want to send us a sweet treat,
have a mail address now, a mailing address.
Send us. We'll try it.
So
poison us.
I might post it again, actually, on our social media, but we did post the mailing address on our Instagram / Facebook. So if you don't already follow us on there, do it. Why haven't you done it yet?
Yeah.
You get so much more information there.
We just posted a really fun reel.
Because we're fun people.
Well, by the time you listen to us, it'll be several days ago. But
that's true. If you haven't seen it, go back and look, though.
Yeah.
You know that, like, audio clip that's like, in reality, I'm a very relaxed and easygoing person. I think that all the time because I'm not. I'm like, in reality, I'm a very relaxed and easygoing person.
For sure.
We post fun reels to prove it. Okay,
here
let's
we
try
go.
This.
Ready?
This delicious banana bread. Mmm.
This is so good.
Oh my God.
There's nothing like homemade.
It's true. I don't know if I've ever had bad banana bread. This one has chocolate chips in it, though, and that's a winner. Five skulls, Skylar.
Five skulls, hands down.
Well done.
This is really good.
Well done.
Yum, yum.
What a meaty episode.
Oh my gosh.
We're ending it
back
with
a bang.
The best possible.
The seriously, best we possible needed that because that was a doozy.
One.
That was a doozy.
Wow. Well, I mean, I said I'd mention so we don't have any ads anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to support us,
buy our merch.
Buy our merch if you can't afford that right now because, again, the economy, we get it.
We get it.
Like, share, tell your friends. Literally just spread the word and interact with us on social media because we love that and that will be payment enough.
And if you just can't get enough, we are making a membership.
A membership!
And we will be launching that in May.
That's going to be so much fun. In celebration of our birthdays.
In celebration of our birthdays, because we're May babies.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. And we're going to have video content coming soon, too. So you can look forward to that. So, again, if you liked this episode, you know what to do. Like, subscribe.
Tell us who you like us.
All the stuff. Send us a message. We're probably going to have a question.
We have another case. We are... Sorry, I mean banana bread.
It's so good.
It is really good. we hear your requests, and they have all been added to the list. The next the next full episode will be a listener request.
Yes. So stay tuned. And we'll do we have like a username or something we could do a shout out for whoever requested it?
We're going to look it up. We'll do it when we record that episode. Yeah.
So listen to see if it's yours. And if it's not, don't you worry. It's on our queue.
It's on our queue.
There's many, many episodes to come this year, so it will happen.
Listen, there's no shortage of crimes.
It's unfortunately, it's true, yeah. It's the nature of the business, but all right, we'll see you guys next time.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
This podcast was produced by Arcus Media.